Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Happy Monday to all of you. Coming up on the show today, it happened over the weekend. Governor Jay Inslee, Attorney General Bob Ferguson getting together to decide who's going to be coronated as the next governor. Hint. Jay Inslee wants it to be Bob Ferguson, so we'll talk about all of that. Also, a local transit agency is trying to downplay the negative impacts of drug contamination, which is odd because in every other setting from now until, I mean, all the memories I have, I thought secondhand smoke was bad for you. And now apparently we're to believe that it's not. Plus, we'll talk about a few stories that have to do with the true, unbelievable obsession with identitarianism in American politics. Also, a new California law that just passed foreshadows some dark days ahead for possibly Washington families. All of that and more coming up. But first, if you have not become a subscriber to the show already, what are you waiting for? UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. It's just $5 a month, and you can help us in our mission to give common sense a comeback. All right, over the weekend, Bob Ferguson officially went from exploratory campaign for governor to official campaign for governor. He had three different campaign kickoff events across the state. One of them was in the city of Seattle. He was surrounded by the who's who of Washington politics. We'll get to more on that in a moment. But this was the tweet from the Seattle Times about it, which I found to be very, very telling about the state of things and where Washington is at, and one of my chief complaints about the state of things. Governor Jay Inslee on Saturday endorsed Attorney General Bob Ferguson in next year's race for governor, handpicking him early from a competitive Democratic field as his chosen successor. And I couldn't help but notice the specific word choice from the Seattle Times, handpicked. Chosen successor. And that language to me really is less reminiscent of a Democratic election than it is of a coronation of a king. And this has been, I think, one of my primary concerns. And it's, I think, is the single biggest issue that drives my votes, that drives my opinion on some of these issues. And that is, this is what happens when we allow one party to have complete political control for so long. They do get to coronate a governor. They do get to choose who is going to be the next in line to take these positions. And you might say, well, Brandy, and I mean, you know, voters have put them in that position, and that's true. However, it is the Democratic Party deciding at the end of the day which Democrat among the field, because there isn't just one, is going to be the one to get the job. And they are circling the bases around Bob Ferguson, and they are going to make sure that it is him. We'll talk about his Democratic challengers coming up in a moment. But again, this is what we're fighting against on the show. I could not care any less what party it is. What I care about is that it's one party, is that we've got a uniparty in Washington State, and I don't think that's healthy. I don't think that results in the best ideas. I don't think it results in the best dialogue, in the best discussions, in the best problem solving. And we've had one party in control for far too long. And we see the results of that. We are not living in a better state today than we were 10 years ago. We are simply not. I don't know who by any measurable standard would say that we are. And so here we have, you know, a year and a half out from the 2024 election for governor in this state. And again, you have Bob Ferguson, who really, and I watched some of the interviews he did after this. He believes the job is his. I mean, he truly believes the job is his. And so then you've got all the other Democrats circling the bases around him. Is that circling? It's not circling the wagons. Nicole's like, circling the wagons. Sometimes I'm really bad at these little sayings. Circling the wagons. And look, fine. They want to be close to power. They believe it's him. I'm going to fight like hell from now until November of 2024 to make sure that it's not him. And I would say it's less personal about him in particular than it is about having yet another Democrat in that office to complete the Democratic trifecta in Olympia once again, and to be just another Democrat in office in that job in the last 40 years. And so, you know, this is kind of predictable, but I had to laugh at one thing. Nicole, you got the video of the, so this was just posted on Bob Ferguson's Twitter account, and it shows everybody cheering for him. Go ahead. Let's go, Bob! Let's go, Bob! Well, that was lame. But a couple moments from that video, I just have to point out. One is the people who are standing behind him, Dow Constantine. If him being there isn't enough to make you not want to vote for Bob Ferguson, I don't know what isn't. But you've got Congresswoman Susan DelBene, you have Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, and I believe, although I can only see a tiny sliver of their face, that is Christine Gregoire, isn't it?
That's what I thought, too.
I'm pretty sure. I'm going to say that with 99% certitude, only seeing one third of her face, that's former Washington Governor Christine Gregoire, which really bums me out. Because she's been working since she left office to try to bring common sense back to city government in Seattle and push back against some of the crime issues and police defunding and all of that. And I'm like, well, why would you support this guy for governor? We got to try to get her back on because I've always liked her.
Okay.
I've always liked her. I've always had good conversations and interviews with her. And that bums me right the heck out. But anyway, there was one other thing in particular that it has got me gleeful. So not infrequently when I post a picture at an event or something. And if there's like 90% white people there, or it doesn't even have to be, if it's like 50% white people, it doesn't matter. On Twitter, people like the far left activists who hate me on Twitter will be like, oh, looks like a Klan rally or something like that. Like, oh, Brandy only has white friends. It could be a picture I send out with a group of just a couple friends. I had a dinner party once for early supporters of the show. And there was like everybody there except one person was white. And they're like, oh, Brandy's a racist and all this. Without fail. I don't tend to count the number of white people and people of color when I walk into a room and make sure that it's proportionate to the population because I tend to think that's a little bit racist and a little bit fake and a little bit overboard. But anyway, so I saw this, this is just a screen grab from a King 5 camera that was there with Bob Ferguson. So now this isn't particularly surprising. I couldn't help but notice that, you know, there's the rainbow of races behind him, right? It's like, oh, it's a very diverse group of supporters cheering him on. I see King County Councilman Girmay Zahalai, who we had on Sundays with Subscribers a couple weeks ago. I mean, really on stage behind him, which is going to be what people see on television. Really, diversity is what they are exuding there. And then I couldn't help but notice when the camera panned and it went to the crowd of people who just showed up, they're like all white. They're all white. And had that been a crowd for me, people would have been like racist. But the thing that, and again, I don't care. I don't care if every person in the crowd is white. I don't count. I don't usually take those things into consideration. But what I think this illustrates is the obsession with identity first, is that that is the crowd that naturally came. Mostly white people, mostly old white people for that matter. But the crowd that they handpicked to put right behind him for the cameras was young, old, all different races represented behind him, but that's not what was represented naturally of the people who actually showed up, and that's why it's all so contrived. It's all so contrived. Again, I don't care the race of the people who support Bob Ferguson, but you see how forced it is. And he was at an event the other day where I pointed out on Twitter, I retweeted some pictures that he'd posted. And I was like, if I had posted these exact pictures from an event I was at, the Twitter mob would have been out in force. Like, oh, that's a Klan rally. They're all white and old. All the people in this picture were older. I'm not going to vilify anyone or like, sorry.
I know the first time you said old.
Older. And they were all white. Every one of them. But it's okay when it's Bob's crowd that's all white, but when it's my crowd, it's not. And it just shows, like, you just have to not care about these things. But I thought it was interesting just how forced that was when you looked at who showed up versus who was behind him. So speaking of obsession with identity, Hillary France is another Democratic candidate for governor, although the Uniparty is going to push her aside. They're going to push State Senator Mark Mullett aside because it's got to be Bob Ferguson. That's who we've chosen. That's who we're planning to coordinate for the job. Hillary France, we've been trying to get her on the show. Hillary France and I have had a wonderful relationship. I mean, I used to go out to wildfires all the time. I'd have her on my Fox 13 show all the time. But I really think she doesn't want to be associated with our show. I think she's trying to get the progressive vote, which is weird because Bob already has it. And I think she's like, well, whereas Mark Mullett, he's trying to get moderate, reasonable people. He doesn't care what political party they usually vote for. So he'll come on whenever we ask him to come in. And Hillary, I think she's really, because there's no other reason to be ignoring us in that way, except she thinks that, what, we're too far to the right? It's like, how do you think you're going to win? Bob's got all those voters. But she is I think of all the candidates as of late, she's disappointing me in her campaigning. Because had you told me like a year ago, who do you like for governor? I would have probably said Hillary Franz would have been a top choice because she's someone who recognizes the challenges of the eastern side of the state. She's shown up for a lot of communities. I've spoken to farmers and ranchers who really appreciate, don't agree with her politics or her political party, but they appreciate the things that she's done for them. And so I think she should have ran on that. She should have ran on her love for the outdoors, the time she spent in these communities during some of their worst crises around wildfires, etc. And that would have been a lane for her to carve out that was unique. Instead, what did she do right away? She jumped into the, oh, calling Dave Reichert right wing and, oh, MAGA this, MAGA that. When Trump was indicted in New York, she from her, and she's the commissioner of public lands, she put out some press release from her official account about, you know, responding to the Trump indictment. It's like, what? Why? Well, nobody cares. So she's totally leaning into the tried and true lazy Democratic playbook, which has been disappointing. And she continues to now, and this is not the first time that she's focused on this, campaign on what aspect of her identity do you imagine she's campaigning on? The fact that she's a woman. She tweeted out, and this came, I think it was about simultaneous when Bob's official announcement was coming down. She said, anything I've ever done, whether it was running for city council or state lands commissioner or my law career, I've been told to sit quietly, wait my turn, and let the men ahead of me have theirs. Yeah, first of all, I think I cut off part of her tweet. I think there was, can you look, Nicole? I think there was more to her tweet. Go to her account, see if that's there. But I think then it was just something like, I've never listened. Okay, first of all, does anybody, I'll take things that didn't happen for 500, Alex, because there's just no way that anyone told her, sit quietly. Oh. What did she say?
After that, it says, never stopped me.
Never period. Stopped me. Yeah, sorry, I cut that off. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Does anybody really think she was told during any of that, run for city council, state lands commissioner, law career, sit quietly, wait your turn. Let the men ahead of you have theirs. No, she was never told that. Nobody ever told her that. But this is the second time now that she's leaned into taking one of the most uninteresting aspects about her, the fact that she happens to have female parts. I say it that way because, and whenever I talk about like skin color, I always talk about skin pigmentation, these immutable characteristics, things you cannot change, things that you were born with. They're, to me, the most uninteresting aspects of someone's qualifications or who they are. It's just so strange. And that's what she's chosen to focus her campaign on, other than aspects of her career that I actually think are very interesting from a Democratic candidate. Now, I still think she'd be better than Bob Ferguson, but this sort of stuff has me so... I turned off at the way that she's running her campaign. But anyway, and we have a jam-packed show when it comes to identitarianism and why it truly is, I think, one of the single biggest poisons that's facing our country right now in politics. It's this obsession with identity at all costs. So anyway, Bob Ferguson, the Democratic Party has officially started its campaign to coronate him. They really don't think that there's any chance he won't be governor. And I've been clear, I think it's probably pretty likely. That being said, I think Dave Reichert has as good of a chance as any Republican has ever had in the last 40 years to win. I'd like to see him out and about campaigning a little bit more. He's been campaigning quietly. I don't think silence is much of a strategy. And so but here's the thing. Dave Reichert wins elections. He has won elections. He's won elections in King County. So I guess, who am I sitting here? I don't think he's always been much of an out and about campaigner, but I hope that they've got some tricks up their sleeve to point out the obvious problems with Bob Ferguson's candidate. Doesn't mean he has to get nasty. I don't want him to get nasty. I don't like nasty campaigns. But I think he can run on his record in a way that draws direct contrast in a more in-your-face way to what Bob Ferguson has said and done. And we'll have more on what Bob Ferguson has said, done, and not done coming up later on in the show. All right, but speaking of sort of this uniparty, which again, that's my primary concern. I just don't want I don't want one party to have control of everything. That's just terrible. That makes no sense. It's the worst possible thing that could happen for we the people. I think this is just an example of what did the circle in the wagons. What does circle in the bases mean? Is that a saying that has any meaning?
Home run. That would be a home run.
Circle in the wagons.
I don't think people say that. I think people say
how many
say
people on the live chat?
Home run.
How many people corrected me when I said circle in the bases?
Nobody. But I see. I think you corrected yourself fast enough.
Okay. So this is somebody did. Okay.
Now there's one. Circling the Bases is about baseball.
Sorry. Circling the Wagons. This story to me shows the absolute incompetence of the Inslee administration, the incompetence of Attorney General Bob Ferguson's office, their lack of care and concern for public safety. Later on in the show, I'm going to have just another example of Bob Ferguson misrepresenting his record on an issue related to public safety, as if I didn't detail enough of them last week in a viral video that they really did not like. But, you know, it's what they say they care about versus what their actions show they care about. And they're very different things. So this is kind of an involved story, so stay with me, but it's really, really egregious. And a complete failure of government. So first, kudos to the Centralia Police Department, because I think if things like these happen without us knowing about them, which they do often, it's like, okay, we just go about our lives. And I don't think it's often, more and more police agencies are starting to call out elected leaders, and I'm glad, because they shouldn't have to bear the brunt of the backlash for things that are out of their control. But Centralia PD, I'm really glad they put this out, or we would not have known about it, because certainly the governor's office wouldn't have told us about it. So when did this letter come out? So this was not long ago. The Centralia Police Department had sent Jay Inslee's office a letter. This was, Nicole, when was the letter? Oh, June 2023. So this is not that long ago, June 2023. They sent Governor Jay Inslee a letter, very detailed, talking about ongoing issues at the Green Hill School, which is a really nice name for a juvenile detention facility in Chehalis, okay? Green Hill School. Doesn't that sound nice?
Oh, yeah.
And
lovely.
Again, they detailed three individual incidents, but the broader point of the letter to the governor's office was to say, hey, you guys really need to do a deep dive into all of the juvenile detention facilities in the state. But in particular, we've had some serious issues at Green Hill School when it comes to staff members helping to traffic drugs in and out of the facility, even in one case, trying to arrange for a firearm, having personal relationships with quote unquote former students at Green Hill, which is former juveniles who were in detention there. And the three examples are crazy. In one example, this happens like in the middle of the night, this is 2020, there is a vehicle registered to a woman named Leandra Calhoun. And this vehicle commits a drive-by shooting at a house in Centralia. So they're contacted by police. And this woman, Leandra Calhoun, says, hey, I was in the car driving around with a guy named Racinos. Daniel Racinos. Well, it turns out that Leandra Calhoun had been a staffer at Green Hill. And this Racinos guy had been a quote-unquote student, a.k.a. juvenile detainee. And now here they are after his release, obviously, palling around town together, allegedly committing and being part of drive-by shootings. Okay, how did this relationship form? They find out that they had an actual relationship, obviously unlawful, but a sexual relationship while at the Green Hill School where she was working. And again, he was a juvenile detainee. And then it goes into some other incidents and having to do with staff members arranging for drugs to be brought into the facility. In one case, talking to someone about arranging to have a firearm. So they send that letter. Again, they drafted it in June of 2023. Now, here's what they got back from the governor's office. Again, in excruciating detail, they lay out these concerns. Hey, we really need to have... They want the governor's office to ask the attorney general's office to launch an investigation to see not only what's happening at this juvenile detention facility, but to do a review of what's happening at all of them. Because if it's happening here with this level of frequency, there's got to be issues elsewhere. So again, they want the governor's office to direct Bob Ferguson's office to do something about this, because this is a huge safety issue. So what do they get back from Jay Inslee's office? Nah, no thanks. No, thank you for this. Thank you for the details. But we think we have it handled. They say that the governor's office has learned that the Department of Children, Youth and Families has implemented changes to its security practices, including the use of full body scanners, launched a new employee training academy. Oh, that'll help. I'm sure you'll learn in the academy. Don't start sexual relationships with the students, detainees. Don't then date the detainee on the outside and commit drive-by shootings. Don't bring drugs in. Don't bring guns in. I'm sure that training academy will teach them that. And then the governor's office say, we also learned that they've enhanced the supervisor account, supervisor academy with a focus on counseling and coaching skills. That ought to help. And then they complete the letter, the governor's office saying, accordingly, the governor's office is declining to refer this matter to the attorney general's office for further investigation. The governor's office appreciates your concerns for the well-being of young people served at Greenhill School, and we encourage you to connect with the Department of Children, Youth, and Families to discuss any remaining concerns, to explore potential partnership opportunities, and learn more about how the agency is transforming its service delivery in response to an older population.
Okay. In other words, they called and they're like, no, we're good here.
Yeah, we're good. No, everything's fine. Again, three-page letter, excruciating detail, only three incidents of many that they had had in recent years, egregious incidents when you're talking about the relationship, the criminal behavior that staff members were engaging in with juvenile detainees who are supposed to be there to turn their lives around. The governor's office is like, eh, no interest. No interest. And predictably, what do you think happened at the Greenhill School? what does common sense tell us would have happened? That there would be a significant issue relating to the very problems that they brought up. And that was indeed the case. So the Chehalis, or the Centralia Police Department, rather, put out a press release.
It was joint, so it was both of them.
It was joint. Oh, Chehalis, Centralia, the DEA, and the Washington State Department of Corrections. Well, things were so bad at this youth detention facility, a.k.a. school, that they went in, joint task force, joint narcotics task force. They served a search warrant at the juvenile rehabilitation and detention facility. And what precipitated that? Well, it was because a juvenile resident at the facility was found unresponsive in their jail cell with indications that they suffered a drug overdose. It was later determined that the student inmate overdosed on fentanyl. So naturally, law enforcement agencies with a bit of common sense said, oh, how did this kid get fentanyl in what is supposed to be a secure facility? Could it be related to these issues that we know exist when it comes to staff members creating relationships with these kids, with these juvenile offenders, bringing in narcotics and God knows what else? So they launched this investigation. They asked in June of 2023 for Governor Jay Inslee to help, for him to refer this issue to the Attorney General Bob Ferguson. They got a big middle finger and a kick rocks. And meanwhile, young people who were supposed to believe that these Democrats and progressives really care about making sure that these young people, even if they get into trouble, they get out and they go on to lead productive lives. That's what they tell us that they care about, right? Well, you don't care that these young people are having fentanyl overdoses in the facility where they're supposed to be getting their lives back on track? I mean, this is, again, this is the common sense the outcome that common sense dictates will happen. And we've said that with so many other issues. We talked about the lack of bail that judges setting people free without any bail. Individuals who have violent, accused of a violent offense, accused of fleeing from law enforcement, what happens? They don't come back. Again, that is the outcome that common sense dictates will happen. And in this case, when you have law enforcement banging down your door as the governor, saying, we've got an issue in these juvenile detention facilities, we need your help with, and the governor shoos them away, do you think that problem is just going to evaporate? That's not going to continue to be a problem, that it might not lead to, if drugs are coming into that facility, the death of young people in that facility, the overdoses of young people in that facility? So how can the governor's office tell me they care about the fentanyl crisis? How can Bob Ferguson's office tell us, as they did last week, that they care about the fentanyl crisis? You sure as heck don't care about fentanyl coming into these juvenile detention facilities, because you were given every chance in the world to try to prevent stuff like this from happening, and you didn't. It's really scary stuff. And again, this is what I go back to, the danger of one-party rule. They don't have to do it. Who's holding them accountable? Media's not. You know, the police have to put this out on their own. And every document, that's what they did. They posted it directly to Facebook. Every document. Here's the letter we sent. Here's the date we sent it. Here's the letter we got back from the governor's office. And here is the result of our joint narcotics task force seizure. And yeah, they posted a picture of They got all sorts of things. Nicole, what did they get?
At some point, there was a gun found. I believe somebody obtained a gun there. There was,
I mean, just insane fentanyl. Stuff.
There was items in those lockers that were, it was contraband from the inmates that was snuck in by their, something like their counselors or whatever. And yeah. Then it's been stored there since 2017, all these different drugs.
Which is crazy stuff. And then they, the crimes they say were committed, possession of narcotic drugs, possession with intent to deliver, introducing contraband in the second degree. And so now we're talking about really serious things here. And I really believe that this shows a continuing lack of actual care and concern for young people, which, remember, they tell us they want to reduce sentences, they want to reduce punishments for juvenile offenders, they want to make sure they get help and not incarceration, yet they leave them in these facilities that clearly are dangerous, where kids are having overdoses, and they just turn a blind eye to it. Is that what's in store for us with Governor Bob Ferguson? Just more of this, more of saying, no, everything's fine. I appreciate your really detailed information, but we're good. We're not going to look into that. It's pretty absurd, and it's really terrifying that that's the direction that we're heading in. All right, coming up next, we talked on the show last week about the UW study that found that in 100% of airborne samples taken in public transit in places like King County Metro, there were traces of methamphetamine. And so we talked about what the results of the study were, but over the weekend, King County Metro responded to it. And true to fashion, they gaslit up and down. We'll talk about their response and also a case that was brought to our attention that shows just how ridiculous it is to pretend that it's totally fine for meth and fentanyl traces to be found on public transportation. But first, we've been talking about our friends at First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge in the spring. We are now members of the First Mark family. All of our insurance is handled by them. We took the First Mark Challenge, cost us absolutely nothing, and we learned a ton in the process about what insurance we had, what we actually needed and didn't need, and found out that you can get great insurance, even better insurance, sometimes for a better price. Here's Dave Taylor. He's the CEO of First Mark.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become First Mark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully, come over to First Mark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the First Mark Challenge is.
Yeah, and I've already heard from so many of you who have either started the process or already taken the First Mark Challenge, and so keep those success stories coming in. I'd love to hear about it, but everybody needs insurance, so why not work with a company, veteran-owned, that can do a review for you for free, and you might find out that you could get better insurance than you already have at a lower price. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, they work for you. All right, let's get to, okay. So this was like one of the most ridiculous stories I'd ever heard last week, the fact that the University of Washington was studying how much drug residue was on public transportation. Common sense tells us that when we see so frequently people using narcotics on public transportation, buses and trains, that that's probably not good to be around. That's probably not good for passengers. It's probably not good for the drivers. So the University of Washington decided to study it. They came out with its findings, and true to form, King County Metro is now spinning those findings in the best possible light. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Okay, so here is the University of Washington study. It came out last week, and the results, by any standard, were stunning. I'm not going to say surprising, because we know that buses, trains have turned into drug dens. It has been a growing issue. And so, I mean, common sense tells us that if people are using drugs on trains, on buses with frequency, that they're probably leaving some sort of residue behind. And so University of Washington, which I thought was a very good idea, went out and actually tested multiple local transit facilities and agencies. They did swabs in the air. They did swabs of hard surfaces, and the results were pretty insane. So they said they analyzed the findings from 78 air samples and 102 surface samples collected from transit vehicles. Of the 78 air samples, 25% had detectable fentanyl, 100% had detectable meth. 100%. Of the 102 surface samples, 46% had detectable fentanyl, and 98% had detectable meth. And then it wanted to say, detection of fentanyl or methamphetamine by the lab does not mean it poses a health risk to operators of the riding public. And they simply said, we don't have enough data to tell us what the health implications might be. Now, I certainly hope that they continue that study. Maybe they pull some hair samples from drivers or something like that. And I'm not saying that they're lying, that UW is lying when they're saying that they don't have enough data to know the long-term implications of it. I believe that they need to continue to collect data to get that information. However, again, I go back to, and this is becoming a theme, what does common sense tell us? We know that the drugs are bad. We know that meth is harmful. We know that fentanyl is very harmful. In fact, we've been told over and over by public health officials and politicians alike that a tiny, tiny bit of fentanyl, the size of the tip of a needle, can kill you. So any traces of fentanyl, no matter how small, common sense tells us that could be deadly and that could be detrimental. However, when this study came out, King County Metro takes to its Twitter account and spins those findings in the best possible light for them, to the detriment of the traveling public and of the hardworking people who drive their buses and operate their trains. They said in a tweet, in a first-of-its-kind study, the UW released an analysis of drug smoke and residue samples collected on transit vehicles. Health officials say the levels are extremely low and riding transit remains safe. That is what they chose out of all of that information to pluck out and to put out on Twitter. That's the headline. Traveling on transit remains safe. And then I went and looked deeper. I mean, they posted it with a long post and they acknowledged, you know, we need to work to fix some things, etc. But the whole 100% of airborne samples had meth? Nowhere to be found. No acknowledgement of it whatsoever. The downplay, I mean, they can spin anything. And I think the thing that really bothers me about this is a public entity that is a, we're supposed to believe, a critical public service, which I think it is, but they want more people to ride public transit. It's a taxpayer-funded entity. And they are that quick to downplay something as serious as exposure to illicit drugs. Exposure to drugs that can easily kill in small quantities. And I have to think, how are you working for the public when you do that? And as soon as this response came out from King County Metro, I was happy to see a lot of people pointing out the hypocrisy of it. I mean, when you think of cigarette smoke, for instance, since we've been tiny, since I was a tiny toddler, it's been drilled into my head about secondhand smoke will kill you. Secondhand cigarette smoke will kill you. I mean, you really think I could go on a King County bus or a metro line and light up a cigarette without people throwing a fit, as they should? I've never smoked, by the way. Not a smoker. Very proud of that. But for some reason, we almost, I don't know, for the sake of political correctness, we're not willing to assign the same obvious level of danger to the secondhand effects of meth or fentanyl. That so much so that government entities are downplaying the possible health ramifications? Can you imagine being a King County bus driver, hearing those results that 100% of air samples had meth and a lot of them had fentanyl? And King County Metro, your employer, is saying public transit remains safe to ride. What world are we living in? And a viewer actually sent us an article from a few days ago that puts this all perfectly in perspective. We take children away from people for this kind of stuff. We charge people, rightfully so, with felonies for this kind of stuff. This was an article from the Peninsula Daily News from just August 29th. A Forks man charged with drug endangerment, hair tested from his 18-month-old, had meth in it. The article says a Forks man has been charged with one count of controlled substance endangerment in a case involving an 18-month-old child. John Robinson III, 35 of Forks, was charged in Clallam County Superior Court with a special allegation for domestic violence, family or household member. He was arrested Thursday after the child was found in a bedroom filled with what turned out to be methamphetamine smoke. The charge is a Class B felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison and or a $20,000 fine. That makes sense. You're exposing an 18-month-old child to meth smoke. Now he faces time in prison, up to a decade. Now I imagine he's going to lose custody of that child. Again, rightfully so. But you turn around and exposing thousands of commuters to methamphetamine smoke, to residue from fentanyl on your buses and your trains because you lack the political will to make sure that those are safe environments for the traveling public and for your riders. We're told by King County Transit that that's safe, that it remains safe. Think about that. Think about the insanity of that. Nobody believes that. And why do they think they could get away with that? The media, for a long time, I think, has allowed them to get away with stuff like that. We can say anything. We can say anything, and no one will challenge us on it. If you are a transit driver, a transit rider, particularly, though, if that is your job for 40 hours a week working in these environments, we want to hear from you. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. We want to hear from you. Because I have to believe that that is, if it's this infuriating to me, I have to believe that the depth of anger you're feeling about this is unreal. And again, this all goes back to, this is easily avoidable. This is part of the drug crisis. The drug crisis is to blame for almost every other societal ill that we're facing. The crime crisis, the homelessness crisis, the mental health crisis. It all boils down to drugs. Yet we have a guy who is poised to become the next governor of Washington who said in 2021 that he wanted state lawmakers to decriminalize possession. He wanted individual drug use and possession not to be a criminal matter anymore. Given the circumstances that we're in, it's my opinion that that should be disqualifying. But this is the circumstance that we're in. We have people at the highest levels who have let the drug crisis become so bad that it has spilled out into every aspect of society, including public transportation. And the agency in charge of it wants you to believe that everything is just fine. Everything is not fine. And shame on them for saying so. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. You can turn your frustration into action. Please do at future42.org. You can find out about opportunities to push back against ridiculousness like that. All right, I'm ready to shock you guys on Unbelievable today. I actually agree with Gavin Newsom on not one, but two things. Brace yourself. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Dianne Feinstein is not running for her seat again in 2024, which is a very good thing because her age and her situation, certainly with her health, does not allow for it. And so I'm glad she's at least one of the many politicians in Congress who should be making the same decision. I'm glad she actually has. So obviously this has led to this big push among Democrats who want that job. They want to be in the Senate, and that seat hasn't been opened for so long because she's been sitting in it. But there's also this added concern that, okay, what if Dianne Feinstein cannot serve out the remainder of her term for health reasons? Then it would fall on California's governor, Gavin Newsom, to appoint someone to that position until the election in 2024. He spoke with Chuck Todd on Meet the Press, and he talked about the fact that he has pledged, he threw out one of these meaningless pledges, where he said he's going to, if that happens, he'll appoint a black person. He'll appoint a black person to Dianne Feinstein's Senate seat. Again, identitarianism. totally obsessed with identity, totally obsessed with a characteristic that would have no bearing on their qualifications to hold one of the most powerful positions in the country. So I want to play the back and forth with Chuck Todd that Gavin Newsom had.
It's my job. It's my responsibility. If we have to do it, we'll do it.
You're going to abide by your pledge?
Yeah. Interim appointment. I don't want to get involved in the primary.
So no, you would not appoint anybody that is filed for this race?
It would be completely unfair to the Democrats that have worked their tail off. That primary is just a matter of months away. I don't want to tip the balance of that.
But you're going to abide by it would be essentially a caretaker, an African-American woman.
We hope we never have to make this decision, but I abide by what I've said very publicly on a consistent basis, yes.
Now, I obviously disagree with the idea or the notion that someone should be appointed on the basis of the color of their skin, but that is what he has pledged. So he says if he appoints someone, has to appoint someone to that position because Dianne Feinstein can't finish out her term, that he will abide by the pledge that he's taken, which who'd you pledge to? It's so weird. However, I agree with Gavin Newsom that it should not be someone who's running for the job. I agree with Gavin Newsom that that would be deeply unfair. You have a number of candidates who are already campaigning for that job, and if he chooses one of them to fill it, he's essentially, again, coronating them to say, okay, I'm going to say that you're the one who should be in that position. It makes it much more likely that that person would keep the position after the election. I agree with Gavin Newsom. I think he should stay out of it and appoint someone who can just be a caretaker, and I don't want the job, I'm not running for it, I'm going to fill the role until the election is held and the people decide. I agree with that. Barbara Lee, however, a congresswoman from California who is running for Dianne Feinstein's seat, is very troubled by what Gavin Newsom said, very troubled. She sent out a tweet saying, I am troubled by the governor's remarks. The idea that a black woman should be appointed only as a caretaker to simply check a box is insulting to countless black women across this country who have carried the Democratic Party to victory election after election. Now, if this was the only tweet she sent out, I might agree to say, okay, I'm going to appoint a black person, but only in the caretaker position. And so I'm going to fulfill this meaningless, identity-obsessed pledge, but it's only going to be for the person who's going to be in the role for a couple months. And so I can say I did it, but it doesn't really mean anything. So if that were the only tweet she sent out, I'd be like, yeah, woman has a point. However, she then went on a 5-tweet thread, and I'm just going to call it tweets, okay? I don't know what you call a post on X. I don't know. She then went on a diatribe about... I mean, she's trying to make it sound like she's not talking only about her, but she clearly is, about how she's owed a Senate seat. She's owed an appointment from Gavin Newsom based on what? Her time in Congress, which is a great argument. You know, she already serves in Congress. She's already there. She's in D.C. She has connections based on, I don't know, other life experiences that she has that could prepare her for time in the Senate. No, based on nothing else. Other than the pigmentation of her skin, she believes she's owed this. I'm going to read all 4 of the accompanying tweets to that original one. There are currently no black women serving in the Senate. Since 1789, there have only been 2 black women senators who have served a total of 10 years. That's because one of them is currently the vice president of the United States, I feel like I need to point out. She went on to say, the perspective of black women in the U.S. Senate is sorely needed and needed for more than a few months. Governor Newsom knows this, which is why he made the pledge in the first place. If the governor intends to keep his promise and appoint a black woman to the Senate, the people of California deserve the best possible person for the job, not a token appointment. I imagine she thinks that she is the best possible person for the job. Although I like that she says not a token appointment. She goes on to say, black women deserve more than a participation trophy. We need a seat at the table. Okay. Then earn it. Run for it, which is what you're doing. In this country, senators are not given seats at the table. Senators have to, for the time being, they have to earn their seat at the table by being elected by the people. The sanctimony and the lack of self-awareness involved in advocating angrily for you to get a job because of the color of your skin, not only any job, one of the most important jobs in the country, because you feel like you're owed it because Gavin Newsom made some weird pledge to hire someone based on skin pigmentation. That is what's wrong with politics. That's what's wrong with society. I agree that I think that Senate, I think the halls of Congress, I think that they should be reflective of a variety of communities in our country. We have a very diverse nation. It's one of the beautiful things about America. I want people of all ages and races to run for office and to represent the interests of their constituents and their neighborhoods and their communities. But you don't just get vaulted because you think you deserve it based on the color of your skin to a U.S. Senate seat. And groveling like that is, I mean, I don't know if she thinks that that's going to help, but it is certainly indicative of this class of politician in our country and what they think they're owed, what they think is owed to them. Second thing I agree with Gavin Newsom on, kind of, I'll have some caveats. So Politico did an article, again, based on this Chuck Todd interview that I think aired on Sunday, I think, and this was part of it. And Politico pulled out an interesting part of that interview for a story, and it was about Gavin Newsom reflecting on California's COVID response, which we all know was atrocious. If there was a state more atrocious than Washington, it was absolutely California. I mean, you think of some of the things that happened down there, them cutting off people's electricity because they were partying at night. I mean, really wild stuff. And I don't think that was Gavin Newsom. I think that was like in one particular county or city, but still, California as a whole. So the headline from Politico, "We would have done everything differently. Newsom reflects on COVID approach." So apparently in this interview with Chuck Todd, Gavin Newsom had a real come to Jesus with himself about how they handled COVID. And he said, quote, "I think all of us, in terms of our collective wisdom, we've evolved. We didn't know what we didn't know. We're experts in hindsight. We're all geniuses now." Later on, he said of criticism to his state's decisions, "All of it is legitimate in terms of reflection." He did, however, end the conversation around this by saying, "It should be alarming to all of us that all of a sudden health became partisan. And that's something we're going to pay a big price for going forward, but it won't break us because we're remarkably resilient." So I agree with Gavin Newsom that everyone's an expert on the COVID pandemic in hindsight. You know, everyone has an opportunity to look back at what happened and to say, well, that didn't work. I mean, there's a reason, there's a saying, hindsight's 20/20. So I agree with him on that. Now, whether I agree with him that everyone has learned and everyone has grown from those decisions, I don't agree with. But I agree when Gavin Newsom says it should be alarming to us that all of a sudden health became partisan. I agree. Health certainly was not partisan to that extent until the pandemic happened. And it happened during a period of deep political divides in our country where a lot of people will only believe what their own political party tells them. However, Gavin Newsom is talking clearly about, and he went on in the interview to talk about, you know, whenever he did something, Republicans would jump on it. Yeah, but whenever Republicans said or did something, you'd jump on it. So you were just as responsible for turning COVID into a partisan issue as the other side. You're both to blame. And we let our political divisions and differences get the best of us during an emergency period of time, not only in this country and in this world. And Gavin Newsom contributed to that in a very serious way, a profound way. So while I agree with him that it's easy to, in hindsight, say, oh, we did this right, we did this wrong, while I agree with him that health should not be a partisan issue, I don't know whether he has truly reflected on his own contributions and his own failings to the extent that he perhaps should. All right, coming up next, we're going to dip outside of Washington State and something really disturbing back down in California. A bill that we suspected would pass when it comes to parental rights has indeed passed. We're going to talk about what that might mean for Washington families down the road. But first, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones, a wonderful real estate agent in our area. He and his team have services that you're not going to find from traditional real estate agents. One of them we've been talking about is the Listing Boost Concierge Service, where if you've got to sell your house but you need some work done for it, they can not only come in, completely take over those projects, but they can help pay for it up front. And then you can pay for it on the back end after closing. It's what Susan in Federal Way did before selling the home she's lived in for 25 years.
I knew I had to paint. I knew I needed to get new flooring. I needed to get new lighting. I told him up front that I was very interested, that I did not have the time or the finances to do what needed to be done. And he immediately jumped in with, well, I do. Work started immediately. And I would say in 2 to 3 weeks, they had landscaping done. They had all the painting done. The new floors were put in. All the lighting was put in. It just was all so fast. And the rest is history. It was on the market for 7 days. I was able to get well over listing price.
To be specific, Susan got 20 offers, sold it for 15% over list price, and ended up getting $200,000 more than an investor offered her before the renovations. I mean, come on, those are amazing results just by making a phone call to West Jones and Associates. So check them out, sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. Start by simply using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, dipping outside of Washington State, this one's serious. And it's one of those, I would say, I hate to say I told you so, but you guys all knew, and you know what is coming. When we were unable to stop Senate Bill 5599 in Washington, which allows for youth to run away to a shelter, be hidden from their parents if they want to get certain types of gender hormone therapy, for example, we knew that if we couldn't stop it, that was the beginning of a really slick slope. I'm not even going to say slippery. It was the beginning of a really just, what is a better word? More.
It's funny because people are coming up with different metaphors and things like that because you're on a roll today. So
what other metaphor?
You just gave them some more.
What other metaphor have I gotten wrong?
No, not that you've gotten wrong. You just brought them up. So then everybody's on a roll today.
Oh, yeah. My circle the bases. I gotta get serious. This is a serious story.
Okay.
I was trying to think of a... We're off a cliff.
There.
Not slippery slope. It's a cliff. Okay, back to center. Back to center. Seriousness. We knew that if we weren't able to stop 5599, that it would be like walking off a cliff in Washington State when it comes to parental rights, because it has only emboldened them. And unfortunately, we also have to look to what's happening in Oregon, what's happening in California when it comes to this issue, because what happens there happens here. And the worst, I would say, even worse than 5599, was a bill being debated in California called AB 957. And AB 957, unfortunately, has passed. And this is the headline from Town Hall. California lawmakers passed bill punishing parents who do not affirm trans children in custody battles. So one of the worst aspects of this particular now law in California is, let's say that you're getting a divorce, you're in some sort of custody dispute, your former significant other agrees with whatever gender identity your child has at that moment in time, and you don't. Well, that can be used against you to decide who your child goes to, who gets custody of your flesh and blood. You think about, I mean, there's a lot of reasons that someone might be the less fit parent in a custody dispute. There are a lot of legitimate reasons that a court should weigh. Whether that parent, I don't know, has a seven-year-old who wants to identify as a gender other than the one they were born at, and whether that parent agrees with that, shouldn't be anywhere on the list. Shouldn't even be brought in a courtroom, shouldn't be considered by a judge, shouldn't even be a fleeting thought of something that could be used to take a child away from that parent. And I remember, because we talked about this on the show when it came up, it was California State Assemblywoman Lori Wilson. So this clip I'm going to play you is from June of 2023. We played it on the show back then when this debate first really got attention. And she has a trans child, so it's really personal to her. But here's the clip we played back when this was being discussed.
So this particular bill adds the very important factor that affirming a child's gender identity is in their best interest, which is what your question is about. Why does it actually say that in an affirmative way? And it really is because if you have a seven-year-old who's talking about having a potential to say, being able to articulate that they believe that they are not the same gender as they are biologically, then it should be affirmed. And through care, it should be determined. And that's what we did with our own child. And that would give ability for a parent who wasn't sure to affirm and get their child the care that they need to make that, so they can begin to articulate that determination. But by saying and rejecting it in wholesale, then you're essentially rejecting your child. And that is not in the best interest of a child. We should be affirming our children in every possible way.
We should be affirming our children in every possible way. And I'm not the one who came up with some extreme example of, oh, what if a seven-year-old wants to identify as a different gender? That was her. That was the assemblywoman who was pushing it. We should be affirming our child in every possible way. And I don't mean to be dismissive of people who are really going through a gender identity crisis in their lives, but if you have a child who comes to you and says, I want to be a pretty, pretty princess, or I'm a dragon, or I'm an astronaut, do you say, yeah, you are, and ship them off into space on the next space shuttle? No, because children are children. And the idea that, again, in the words of that assemblywoman, that you could have a seven-year-old who says, I want to be a boy, born a girl, I want to be a boy. Let's say your ex-wife, your ex-spouse says, yeah, I'm cool with that. And you're like, no, I'm not. That could be a reason to take your child away from you, to give your child, to give full custody to another parent. You guys, this is crazy stuff. This isn't political. This shouldn't be partisan. That's just insane. And that happened in California. And if you think that that will not happen here, I have news for you. I wouldn't be surprised if that bill is being drafted right now, because they got away with 5599. The media let them get away with 5599. The media, remember the headlines we read you, where the media was fact-checking opposition to 5599, fact-checking using Democratic political talking points. Not, they hadn't even read the bill, it seemed. And we said time and time again, and I know none of you are to blame for this. I know none of you supported 5599. By none, I mean, I'm assuming most, based on your comments during the time that we covered it. But this is where we have to, the reasonable middle has to wake up. We have to find a way to get more people who are dug into their trenches to really look at these things without the political goggles on. And if we can't do that, I'm so worried about the state, because again, this stuff is common sense. How much of this have we talked about today? I mean, the fact that you've got, you know, law enforcement officials saying, hey, we've got all this stuff happening, these juvenile detention facilities. The governor's office, the attorney general say, meh, no big deal. And then they have a big bust at the juvenile detention facility that they wrote to them about. I mean, when you talk about all the stories involving Bob Ferguson that we've discussed, the King County Metro store, that's just common sense. We're told secondhand smoke kills. Yet you're saying it's fine to be riding on a bus where 100% of air samples contain methamphetamine? We're supposed to believe that makes any sense? And now you've got this story. I mean, having a seven-year-old, again, in the words of that California assemblywoman, dictate what gender that he or she is going to be, and then use that against an adult, a parent who's supposed to look out for the well-being of that child when it comes to whether they get custody? Come on, guys, that's not political. That doesn't make any sense. But that's the direction Washington State is heading, because that's the direction Oregon's heading, because that's the direction that California is heading. And that is scary, scary stuff. And all we can promise is that we'll be all over it when it happens, when we get news that something else absolutely dangerous and destructive is going to be proposed. That's all we can do, right? We can try to bring attention to it. We can try to grow this mission and this movement with the help of all of you. And we can try to just wake people up. I mean, that's all we can do, right? All right. We'll get to questions and comments from the stream. Look forward to hearing some of your creative metaphors for me just bumbling through my metaphors today. But first, you know how many days away my wedding is, Nicole? 12
days.
My wedding is 12 days away. And this is what I was working so hard for on the East Side Weight Loss Clinic plan. I just wanted to feel like myself again before the wedding. This time last year, do you remember? Sorry, we're going to get off track of the ad for a second. Do you remember this time last year we went to a fancy event together?
Yes.
In fact, it was the last time I saw Dory in person. So I remember it very well because I have pictures of it, which is like this like catch 22, because I'm glad I have these pictures of us and Dory last ones.
But both of us felt terrible.
But I looked terrible. Mm-hmm. But it's okay because they have Dory in them. But I'm like, oh my God. But that was just a year ago. Look at me now. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, people. I'm down more than 35 pounds. I feel amazing. And I'm so happy. I mean, I'm still going to need you, Nicole, to cinch up my corset as tight as it goes, because you can never have a corset being too tight.
I'm looking forward to it.
I could have lost 1,000,000 pounds and I'd still be like, cinch that corset. Anyway, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation. You can talk to Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team about whether the program is right for you. I like it because there's structure. No prepackaged meals, no counting calories, but they do tell you, hey, here's what you should eat. Here's what we need you to eat. And if you follow the program, there is no question that you're going to lose weight. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Nicole, we haven't seen you today, have we?
No, I don't think so. I've been a little bit, you know, preoccupied over here.
I've been just over here.
I just haven't hit. Sometimes it's distracting for me. I have to hit buttons and stuff to bring myself on screen. Sometimes I don't think it's worth it. They don't need to see me.
Oh, it's always worth it to see that beautiful face. see.
With my scar.
So. Oh my God. Nobody else sees your scar but you. Okay, let's see. Carrie Harris says, off subject a little. I know your ladies are busy, but I tried to order a shirt. No sizes larger than XL. Are those coming soon? If if not, I may have to call Eastside Weight Loss. Keep up the good work. Yeah, we sold out of some sizes. We did have XL and XXL. Mm-hmm. But we didn't have a lot of them because when we did, so this has been like our whole, we're having a lesson in merch storing. When we sold the first round in person, though, nobody bought any of those. Right. And our mediums and larges were gone. So we did the next order and we ordered like a bajillion medium and larges and just a few of the other ones. And then they went up real quick.
Yep.
So yes, we are coming. Actively working with the local company. And I'm going to have to give the companies a little shout out when we, who made them, a little Monroe-based, or not Monroe, Snohomish-based company.
Yes.
Working to get those extra sizes in. So we will alert all of you when we still have shirts and stuff available. But yeah, I think the XXLs and most of the XLs are sold out. But you can order a hat. The hats are one size fits all. And the shirts run a little big, to be honest.
Yeah.
If you're thinking extra large and you're like on the fence, go with a large. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah. I would say that's fair. I think men and women wear them differently. I think if you're a woman and going between the two, go lower. If you're a man, I get it.
Yeah,
like, you don't want to. They like them a little more spacey up here.
Okay. All right. Spacey up where?
The shoulders.
Oh, I thought you were pointing somewhere else. I was like, I don't think men needed spacey right there.
Email.
Oh, weird. Okay. Anyway, Bill Biz, $20 super chat. Brandy, regarding the Sunday comments on mask sightings here in Bainbridge, we do have the occasional Inslee impaired NPC? What's NPC? Who masks while biking, but 95% of us definitely do not, in spite of our infamous island resident, Inslee. What is an NPC? See, you guys always do this to me, and then I look dumb on the air.
Well, see, I'm glad. If I don't know it, I put it in there because I feel like I must be dumb, and you'll probably know it.
No, it's just we're not hip. Megan White says, ha-ha, I love the title of your show, The Jay and Seth. Nicole put that comment in because this is the one episode that she titled. I never let her title the shows. I'm like, terrible title. Terrible title. This is the one. I was like, good one.
Yeah.
She put this comment in because she needs some self-congratulations today. I love the title of your show, the Jay and Silent Bob reference, limiting my political news exposure for mental health reasons, but I have to keep Brandy and Nicole in my daily routine. Thank you for helping keep the news bearable, ladies. Yeah, the title of today's show is Jay and King Bob Strike Back.
Right. I appreciate, though, that she's trying. I get it, trying to step away and for mental health and whatnot. But we do try to keep it, you know,
we try balanced. To have fun. You know, like we laugh instead of cry.
Exactly.
There are many days where I could sit here and sob because of how screwed up things are. Mm-hmm. But we choose to laugh.
We choose to balance.
Choose to laugh.
The show.
Okay. Sharon Barber says, that looks like Gregoire, all right, bringing back a steal the governor seat five. Okay. You're talking about 2004. I do think that was Gregoire in the picture. Be interested in having her on. I've always liked our chats.
Non-compliant person. Possibly.
Oh, that's probably a non-compliant person. Mm-hmm. Janice Walker, Eastern Washington needs to hear from Dave Reichert. His name isn't nearly as well known on this side of the state. He needs to include us. I lived on the west side of the state for 30 years, so I'm familiar, but I mention him around here and I get who? Yeah, I think the challenge with that is he does need to spend his time campaigning, not all of it, but a lot of it on the west side of the state, because that is where he needs the votes. I hate default voting, but ultimately, if he's the one on the general election ticket, a lot of Eastern Washington, even if they don't know his name, they're going to vote for the Republican, right? So strategy-wise, and I think past Republican candidates have not spent enough time in deep blue areas, and so, but I agree, he needs to be out and about more just generally. Janelle says, unfortunately, us common sense Washingtonians are up a creek without a paddle. Okay, good. And it's slim pickings for us, and we can't be picky or petty. Just do not allow Ferguson in. So if Dave Reichert is our best, at this point, the goal has to be not to let Bob Ferguson in that governor's seat.
I agree.
Up a creek without a canoe. See, I like to put my own twist on the metaphors, you know. Rick Johnson, hey, Rick. I can't imagine not having a conscience and being guided by my morals and values. Wait. I can't imagine not having a There was a Rick. We got to talk about your comma placement. I can't imagine not having a conscience and being guided by my morals and values. But so many politicians seem to have no conscience, morals, or values. If they did, they would at least act in the interests of the majority, the common good. But those of us in the majority continually have our lives negatively impacted by crime, criminals, drug addicts, the mentally insane, and large-scale homeless encampments. It's insane. And I agree. I have some friends from high school coming into Seattle for my wedding, and we had this long text exchange where I spent the majority of it telling them specific blocks to avoid, specific areas of Seattle not to go, what hotels would be in areas where it would be relatively safe. You know how sad and annoying that is? When I moved here, I would have been like, come visit, we'll go down, we'll go out and Pike Alley there, and we'll go listen to live Irish music, and I just wouldn't do that now. And it's such a bummer to, and I'm preparing this one sheet for my visiting family. Mm-hmm. And it's going to start with, I'm sure you've heard, Seattle is a little rough right now. If you'd like to visit, go to A, B, and C. And I don't want to have to do that because some of it's common sense. But I think if you're coming, that's especially bad, from though. The Midwest, you really don't realize like the mentally ill, the drug abuse. And I think if you're just prepared for it, and you're going to go a little bit better, but it's sad. Yeah. On buses and us being told that secondhand meth and fentanyl smoke isn't a big deal. Daniel Circus Adventures says, I ride public transportation all the time. There are bus stops downtown that I don't use anymore because there is a literal cloud of drug smoke engulfing the whole area. It smells like a burning sofa. Yeah, but just take a deep breath because King County Metro says, that's okay.
It's fine.
Glenn says, we have given all of our local youth free passes to breathe this stuff. I agree. GTB. Well, no, that
he's saying we've literally given them free passes. They can ride the bus for free.
Oh, I see what you did there. Mm-hmm, yes, mm-hmm. Correct. Let me see. Let me just get a couple more in. GTB D00. You got to come up with a better name than that. That doesn't roll off the tongue. Just a $4.99 super chat?
Yeah, there was a laughing lemon, but I can't put that in our sheet.
A laughing emoji with a lemon.
Well, it was a laughing lemon, like gift or whatever.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Our sponsors, Shauna says, I'm 1.6 pounds away from my goal weight for my wedding on the 30th. All from Eastside? Oh, you get married a week after me? Oh, that's awesome. See, that makes me so happy. Dana says, we took the First Mark Challenge too, spoke to a very nice guy, Scott. He told us to keep our current insurance, PEMCO. However, after dealing with him, we chose to have him represent us as our PEMCO agent. We're so impressed with First Mark's approach and personal experience. Highly recommend everyone try the challenge too. That's the second one I've heard where somebody's like, yeah, you actually have good insurance. And that tells me they're not money hungry, terrible people, which we know.
Yeah.
Because Dave's great. Marine. Great. Love him. But they're just going to tell you like, hey, actually you did a great job on your own, or yeah, you don't need all that insurance, or here's what you should get. Really cool, cool learning experience. I like knowledge. And insurance, when you get your bill, it's like, what does all that mean? What do those values mean? And then you get a like little lesson on it.
I think it's a good place to tease that we have a new sponsor joining us pretty soon, and so it'll be a surprise listening
to that. We do have a new sponsor joining us, which is good.
It's really exciting. It's because our people are supporting our sponsors. We're so appreciative, or we couldn't do it.
But that is for real. I mean, you guys supporting the sponsors, we wouldn't be able to do the show. Nicole wouldn't have a job if we didn't have the sponsor. Sorry, Nicole.
I appreciate it a lot.
But I'll just say, we're way off the track today. It's 108. I might have to skip sanity check and save it for tomorrow. Mm. But when I first hired you, because, I mean, obviously it was an unexpected situation, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, what are we going to do? We went on vacation, talked about it. I was like, I can guarantee you a job for 3 months, I think is what I told you. Mm-hmm. Like, and then after that, we'll figure it out. Because I really could not afford to hire you.
Right.
And then the universe aligned, and three of Dory's sponsors came over to our show. And then it was like, oh, yeah, now we can just,
we can do it.
It can be your job. So without the sponsors, I mean, it's just, I don't even know what we would do. Okay, so yeah, we are adding a new sponsor on the show this week. And then let's just end with this one. Jeremy Sorensen says, let us also remember those that lost their lives on this day, Patriots Day, 2001. I agree. It's always a gut punch to see the videos again and kind of relive those moments of where you were. And it's so interesting how during those moments, I was very young, I was in seventh grade, still remember minute details.
That kind of points out how much older I am than you.
I was in seventh grade. And you still remember like these tiny details. Like I have full years of my childhood. I don't remember anything from. And you remember these little but details.
It's important because my nieces, none of them remember at all. So it's pretty wild.
So we're going way over today. I'm gonna do a different sanity check than the one that we had planned. Okay, we'll save that tomorrow. And we'll spend, it's actually okay because this sanity check I want to spend a lot more time on. So I've got a related one I'm going to end the show with today. Okay. You guys don't care about all this. Let's just get to sanity check. They're like, we don't care about the backstory branding. So our sanity check today was going to be a long sort of rant on something else I believe Bob Ferguson has misrepresented his record on by using only the most advantageous headlines and actions to paint a picture that isn't fully accurate. I'm going to dive into that in a little more detail on the show tomorrow, but let me just say this. Buckle up. Buckle up. We have been hard on Bob Ferguson. I have been very vocal about my belief that that would be the wrong path for our state to go down. And we have pulled no punches. You get that one right? Pulled no punches. This is the first time, as long as I've been in Washington State, 2024 election, this will be the first time that there is actually a growing media ecosystem to push back against the prevailing narrative. This show, our friend Jonathan Cho, some other good independent outlets that have popped up. This is the first time where Democrats are really going to not fully control a media ecosystem that absolutely kowtows to everything they say and do. And the reason I told you to buckle up is that they are not going to take that sitting down. They are going to push back. It's going to be nasty, probably untruthful, and they are going to do everything they can do to limit our reach, to limit our influence, and to hurt our credibility so that people don't listen to the things that we're telling them, like some of the stories we've had on the show today. So this is going to be a fight. I already know it. I had conversations with people in political circles over the weekend that anger is growing and brewing against what we're doing here, and specifically the pushback against single party rule. So there's a fight ahead. We're not going to back down. We just want to make sure that you're going to be in the fight with us, because this thing is going to get insane. That's going to be a rough...
Absolutely.
Rough 16 months. I already predict it. Anyway.
I have to fix something just because, you know, Bill gives us $20 all the time. I have to clarify his comment. So he had said regarding the Sunday comments on mask sightings here in Bainbridge, we do have the occasional Inslee impaired NPC who mask while biking, right? And I said non-compliant person, but that didn't really work. Somebody said that, and that doesn't work because it's an Inslee inspired, right? So anyway, multiple people, including Daryl, mentioned that it's a non-playable character in video games.
How would
no
we know
wonder
that?
We didn't know.
How would we know that? Non-playable character. Bill, you're always teaching us things. All right, that has been it for today's show. We went way over, but I just have so much to say today. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Thank you for all your merch orders. We're going to start shipping those out here pretty soon. Wear them around proudly. And if somebody gives you grief, you just say, have a nice day. It's very undivided. All right, UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Become a subscriber for $5 a month. We will see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.